This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our future family, and our guest is Archbishop Benjamin Piri of the Archdiocese of Ndola, Zambia. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis on Sunday morning delivered the concluding address of the Italian Catholic Social Week in the city of Trieste in northeastern Italy shortly after arriving there by helicopter. Addressing the delegates gathered at the Generali Convention Center, the Pope called on the Church to help correct the crisis of democracy through participation and political charity. Thaddeus Jones has this report.
On the final day of the annual Italian Catholic Social Week, Pope Francis traveled to the northern Italian city of Trieste on Sunday to share his thoughts on the crisis of democracy. Speaking to over 900 delegates from dioceses and associations across Italy, the Pope appealed for a democratic process that engages personal and community involvement.
Questa è stata la cinquantesima settimana sociale.
In his address, he recalled that the Italian Catholic Social Week draws on the social doctrine of the Church and seeks to offer a gospel vision of social phenomena. Pope Francis offered an image of the crisis of democracy as a wounded heart in which corruption and social exclusion can abound and power becomes self-referential and incapable of serving its constituents.
La parola stessa, democrazia,
the very word democracy, the Pope said, does not simply coincide with the vote of the people, but requires creating the conditions for everyone to express themselves and participate. Democratic participation, he added, must be instilled at a young age so that citizens embrace a critical sense of regarding ideological and populist temptations. The principles of solidarity and subsidiarity, he said, help build the bonds of democracy since they encourage participation and overcome indifference, which he said is a cancer of democracy. The Pope went on to uphold the goal of democratic participation with the image of a healed heart. A democracy with a healed heart, he said, continues to cultivate dreams for the future, engages and calls for personal and community involvement. Catholics, added the Pope, must look beyond quick fixes for democracy's ills and never retreat into a marginal or private faith. He said Christian engagement in politics must take on the aspects of political love, which allows politics to rise to its responsibilities and move beyond polarizations.
Fermiamoci a questo amore.
Pope said, let us train ourselves in this love to circulate it in a world short of civil passion. He concluded, let us learn to better walk together as God's people, to be leaven of participation among the people to which we belong. I'm Thaddeus Jones.
After that address, the Pope presided over Holy Mass at Unity Square of Italy in Trieste. In his homily, the Pope said, what the world needs now is the scandal of faith. Christopher Wells reports.
The Holy Father began his reflection by noting that Jesus himself was rejected by his own countrymen, precisely because of his humanity. They only saw his ordinary life as the son of Joseph the carpenter and could not understand the source of his wisdom and his miracles.
Un Dio forte e potente che sta dalla mia parte.
Strong and powerful God is understandable and attractive, the Pope said, but a God who is weak, even to the point of dying on the cross, a God who challenges us to live for others as Jesus did, is an uncomfortable God that troubles and scandalizes us. But it is precisely this scandal of faith that is needed today, Pope Francis said. We need a scandal of faith that is not indifferent to the problems of this world, but that is rooted in the Incarnation, a faith that enters history, touches people's lives, and becomes a leaven of hope and a seed for a new world. Pope Francis insisted that God can be found in the dark corners of our lives and of our cities, and among the least, the forgotten, the discarded.
E noi che talvolta ci scandalizziamo inutilmente di tante piccole cose.
All too often, he said, we are scandalized by unimportant things, when instead we should be outraged in the face of rampant evil, scandalized by the plight of migrants and prisoners. Like Jesus, who despite being rejected and even tried and executed, remained faithful to his mission, we Christians, too, are called to be prophets and witnesses to the kingdom of God in whatever place or situation we find ourselves in. Let us not be scandalized by Jesus, but on the contrary, let us be indignant at all those situations where life is degraded, wounded, and killed, the Pope pleaded. Let us bring the prophecy of the gospel into our flesh by our choices, even before our words. Pope Francis concluded his homily with an appeal to everyone to commit to working together in the realization that we are all loved by God the Father in order to live as brothers and sisters to everyone. I'm Christopher Wells.
In remarks at the conclusion of the Mass, just before leading the recitation of the Angelus prayer, the Pope called for prayers and efforts for world peace. From this city, let us renew our commitment to pray and work for peace for troubled Ukraine, for Palestine and Israel, for Sudan, Myanmar, and every people that suffers because of war. And let us invoke the Virgin Mary, venerated on Monte Grissa, as mother and queen, the Pope said. For more on this and other stories, visit our website, vaticannews.va/en. As you may have heard in one of our programs, the Regional Bishops' Conference of Eastern Africa, AMECEA, wrapped up a consultative meeting in Kenya on Thursday with a renewed commitment to safeguard minors and vulnerable adults. The four-day gathering in Nairobi brought together officials from the 9 member countries of AMECEA, that is, the Association of Member Episcopal Conferences in Eastern Africa, and the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors to discuss child safeguarding strategies. Let us listen to a part of the final statement as read out by the current president of AMECEA, Bishop Charles Kasonde of Zambia's Solwezi Diocese.
Mindful of the challenges that children face, including material deprivation and poverty, emergencies, both man-made and natural disasters, we recognize that many children lack sufficient food, quality clothing, and shelter, and struggle to access basic quality education and health care. Tragically, some children endure physical, emotional, sexual, and spiritual abuse, neglect, and exploitation. The harsh reality of children being recruited into armed forces, criminal gangs, and radical groups deny them the beauty and innocence of dignified childhood. We echo Pope Francis's statement and sentiment that a society which neglects its elderly and its children has no future, as it disregards both its heritage and its potential. We reaffirm our unwavering commitment to protecting children and vulnerable adults, acknowledging both current and past instances of abuse. The Church in the region steps up her commitment to prevent, detect, and respond to all forms of abuse. Our goal is to ensure that every child and vulnerable adult finds in the Church a safe haven where they feel protected, heard, and secure. We commit to ensure that safeguarding policies are regularly reviewed and updated to reflect best practices on safeguarding and align to the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, Universal Guidelines Framework. We work closely with experts in child welfare and abuse prevention to ensure our policies are effective and comprehensive. Aware of the existing knowledge and skill gaps, necessary for maintaining a protective environment. The Church will strive to continually enhance the capacity of its pastoral agents, staff, and affiliates at all levels, including national conferences and dioceses. The aim is to better uphold the principles of safeguarding children and vulnerable adults. Additionally, the Church will work through small Christian communities to strengthen the capacity of families and children and enhance values and morals to ensure everyone's safety. Support for survivors. We recognize the severe, long-lasting impact of abuse on victims and survivors. The Church is committed to the Memorare initiative, which offers care and support through counseling, spiritual guidance, and rescue services. We are dedicated to listening to survivors, validating their experiences, and ensuring they receive justice and healing.
That was a part of a statement by the bishops of Amesea issued in Nairobi on Thursday. In Nigeria, the Archbishop of Abuja, His Grace Ignatius Kaigama, has criticized the displacement of the original inhabitants of the Federal Capital Territory of Abuja by the government. He spoke to reporters on the sidelines of the annual Congress for the Indigenous Tribes of the Federal Capital Territory organized by the Archdiocese. The Congress this year took place at the Papal Ground in Kubwa in Abuja, from where Delphine Asu sent us this report.
The Third Indigenous People Congress had participants from all walks of life, regardless of their religious inclinations. The Chief Shepherd of Abuja Archdiocese, Most Reverend Ignatius Kaigama, while speaking with newsmen, described as inhumane the act of displacing the indigenous people in Abuja.
My priest in one of the parishes has told me that they have been given a quick notice. The whole village, they are building a fence to surround the whole village and they are asking them to move. But the question is, where are they moving to? No answer. They are just asked to leave, that this is government property and this is very inhuman. I told them not to leave because where do they go to? They said that they are living on land that government has acquired earlier on. These people have been living there for over 25 years. Where was the government? Why didn't they alert and then provide good alternatives for them?
He then called for selective acculturation of the indigenous culture and the Christian faith.
These are very decent cultural practices. They are not injurious to anyone. The culture of respect, the culture of honesty, obedience, and so on, these are things we can bring into the Christian faith.
An indigenous priest, Reverend Father Solomon Danladi of St. Donald Catholic Church, Karu, Abuja, shared his thoughts and hopes for the original settlers of Abuja.
It is actually very demanding, but I must confess, it is a thing of joy that you are in the front and others are following you. I see Gbagi people as a people that will be very united, very cooperative, and always working for the good of all the Archdiocese of Abuja.
In Abuja, Nigeria, Delphine As reporting.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now our feature, family. Church in Africa as a family of God. Its people, challenges, values, and hopes.
My name is Father Paul Samasumo with your program, Family. Archbishop Benjamin Piri of the newly elevated Metropolitan Archdiocese of Ndola in Zambia was in Rome last weekend to receive the pallium from Pope Francis during the Eucharistic celebration of the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul. He is our guest on Family today. Thank you very much for finding time to come to Vatican Radio Studios. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you on the elevation of Ndola Diocese as Ndola Archdiocese. and also yourself as new Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Ndola.
Thank you very much, Father Paul, and thank you for having me here.
What does this transition, what does it entail?
The transition from being a diocese to an archdiocese, to a certain extent, is a recognition of the growth of the local church. Because before a local church can be given the status of an archdiocese, it means that there must have been quite a lot of recognizable spiritual activity, evangelization, and especially growth of the local church in terms of numbers, but also the overall growth in terms of the understanding of the people with regard to the faith itself. That means that the people are now able to understand and are able to also instruct others. So it is basically a growth from one level to the next.
So you have to change all your stationery and everything, I would imagine.
Yes, that's part of the what we need to do. Of course, for the people in Ndola and even for the personnel, it is something perhaps that they have been longing for a while. And that changing of the stationery and all that is something that they will do gladly. And I'm aware that even our own radio there, Radio Chengero, they have been very emphatic when transmitting that this is Radio Chengero from Ndola Archdiocese. So there is a certain pride in the process and in the growth.
Your Grace, you've been here. You came to Rome to receive the pallium from the Holy Father himself. What is really a pallium? The pallium is won by Metropolitan Archbishops, we are told.
Yeah.
Perhaps while you're at it, you can just explain these terms, Metropolitan Archbishops, Suffragan Dioceses, and so on.
It's not just the Metropolitan Archbishops who are a pallium, but also the Pope. The Pope, first of all, is the primary person who wears the pallium, and followed by the Metropolitan Archbishop. A pallium basically is a woolen piece of material which is worn around the shoulders of the Metropolitan Archbishop, with a part in front which is hanging down in front and another one behind. Probably you have seen that it has a longer part here and a longer part there with the signs of the cross on it. It is basically just a symbol of the authority which the Metropolitan Bishop has over the area that is assigned to him. It also symbolizes the communion that the Metropolitan Bishop shares with the successor of Peter. And in his province, he wears that pallium as a sign that he is a kind of chief shepherd, if you like, who is helping to guide in that part of the people of God. So basically, if a lot was expected of a bishop before he became metropolitan, when he becomes a metropolitan, even more is expected now. He must be able to help and guide, not only in his own diocese, but in accordance with the law, for those occasions when it is required, to be able to guide also in the suffragan dioceses, which brings me now to the word suffragan. A suffragan diocese is a member of an ecclesiastical province. The metropolitan see, or the archdiocese, is like the headquarters. Now, within that area of the province, you have dioceses which are connected with or attached to that metropolis. And from that metropolis is expected, certain services are expected. For example, when you talk about the ecclesiastical tribunal, the tribunal of appeal for a suffragan diocese should always be the metropolitan tribunal. So that's one of the roles which this one plays. Bishops by definition equals, you know, they are all equal. But what about if something is not going well or there is a problem in a diocese, who is competent to go in and intervene? It is the metropolitan bishop in his province. He can go and ask what's happening. And when Rome is asking what's going on there, even the metropolitan will be questioned. What has happened in your province there? The other part, of course, is more solidarity. There's a closer union between the metropolitan see and the suffragan dioceses in terms of perhaps pastoral guide, certain strategies, certain things that you want to be in common. A province can come up with that and say, in our province, because of proximity, but very often also because of language, at times you say, in our province, we are going to do it this way, in accordance with the agreement also from the Bishops' Conference, but not necessarily tied to the Bishops' Conference, because it might be just something regional which you have agreed among yourselves. So, in short, the Metropolitan See is like the headquarters of a province, while the other members are technically what are called suffragans. They do not lose any power. The Metropolitan Bishop has no jurisdiction in the suffragan diocese. He doesn't have. The one in charge is always the diocesan bishop. The Metropolitan Bishop will only come in when required to do so by law.
The Archdiocese of Ndola, you spoke about growth, that this is partly in recognition of the growth. It has experienced exponential growth. What is driving this growth?
Initially, what drove this growth was the question of the mines. There were a lot of immigrants who came from different parts of the country, sometimes even from outside the country, to go and work there. As a result, there was this concentration of people who eventually did not go back home. They settled there. So initially, that's what drove the numbers. You will be interested to know that the Archdiocese of Ndola is one of those places which has a higher number of percentage of Catholics in the country. So that means Catholicism as a religion, while there is a certain percentage of other churches, but the majority still remain the Catholic Church, which are thought now to be numbering about 2 million. We can rightly talk about the exponential growth, and the numbers are still growing because the concentration of evangelization before was in the cities, around the mines, because the cities grew around the mines. The people have not migrated back to where they came from. Instead, now, they have gotten pieces of land for themselves. So you find farmers, some are a bit going towards being commercial, but the majority perhaps subsistent farmers, but still remaining in the same area. And many of them are Christians, and the majority are Catholic.
Some theologians, observers, say, because we always say in Africa the Catholic faith is growing, Christianity is growing, but some observers think that this is something that might not last. What should be done, in your opinion, Your Grace, to deepen the faith, the African faith, while we still have these numbers?
First and foremost is a good foundation. It should not be a type of Christianity which is based on emotion or a kind of or things like that without going too much into details, but rather something that is founded on formation. For us to ensure that what happened elsewhere does not happen to us, we, the clergy and the catechists, and all those who are involved in evangelization, we must foster a good catechesis. The faith must be grounded on firm faith, firm ground. People who are well educated in the doctrine of the church. You see, Father, you will agree with me. We Catholics, when it comes to talking about our faith publicly, we tend to be timid. Sometimes we are intimidated by even somebody who has never really learnt it methodically, but is able to challenge you maybe on a scriptural passage or something, and you are failing to answer. We must reach a point where we have that confidence to say, this is my faith and this is what I believe in. And we need to become more organized, starting from the Christian community. We tell the people in the small Christian communities, instead of just meeting and discussing about fundraising and all those things there, there must be also an aspect of catechesis. There must be instruction. Let our children grow up knowing very well what it is it to be a Catholic. What is the faith founded on? What's the difference between being a Catholic and belonging perhaps to another Christian faith or a sect? If we can emphasize this and ensure that people are well instructed, and if the pastors themselves, the priests, are committed and they have activities in their parishes which ensure that the growth of the faith is based on a firm doctrine, then I can assure you that even when that time will come, we shall be still standing strong.
Your Grace, thank you so much.
I'm very grateful for the opportunity. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you again, Your Grace.
You have been listening to Family with Father Paul Samasumo.
You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praise be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.